to introduce the Human Planet Prom.
Human Planet certainly was a landmark series. I don't know if you managed to watch any of it, but there were some great moments that have really stuck in my mind. I especially remember the Pa Alang fisherman in the Philippines plunging to depths of 40 metres using just a length of plastic tubing to breathe through. Of course, just as special in a different way was the Radio 3 companion series Music Planet, where Andy Kershaw and Lucy Duran visited many of the places and people that were featured in the TV programmes. Tonight's prom is a celebration of both series. We'll be hearing highlights from Nitin Sawhney's score for Human Planet, played by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. And there are also five groups who've come to the Royal Albert Hall from all around the world who featured in Music Planet. In the second half, we'll be hearing Aya Khan from the Sakha Republic in northeast Siberia. They're three women who play mouth harps. And songs from the Bibelang Shark Calling Group from Papua New Guinea. This is the first time they've ever travelled abroad. In the first half, we'll hear the powerful voice of Rasmus Lubert from Greenland, the Zambian troubadour Enoch Mbongwe, and the throat singers Huzuk Tung from the mountains of Mongolia. The prom begins with the BBC Concert Orchestra playing the opening titles of Human Planet with the voice of narrator John Hurt. And we're delighted to have with us Paul Rose, who, following 10 years running a research station in Antarctica, has become a TV presenter, recently presenting Britain's Secret Seas. He'll be coming onto the platform after this opening sequence to take us through the events as the evening unfolds. Well, there are screens all around the hall, so the audience here will be able to see video clips from Human Planet, as well as photos from Music Planet. And if you're within reach of a computer, there are some great photos and videos on the programme's websites. You can find those at bbc.co.uk/humanplanet and bbc.co.uk/radio3, and follow the links to Music Planet. And to start us off, here comes Charles Hazelwood to conduct the BBC Concert Orchestra in the opening titles from Nitin Sawhney's music for Human Planet.
Only one creature has carved a life for itself in every habitat on Earth. That creature is us. All over the world, we still use our ingenuity to survive in the wild places, face to face with raw nature. This is the human planet.
The opening titles from Nitin Sawhney's music for Human Planet, the BBC Concert Orchestra with leader Cynthia Fleming, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. Now, here's Paul Rose.
Well, good evening, ladies, gentlemen, young people. Welcome to the Royal Albert Hall and the Human Planet Prom. My name's Paul Rose. I've been looking at Martin Sawney. All here today are the wonderful BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. The Human Planet series was a huge success when it aired earlier this year, and it's gone on to win many awards, including the two BAFTAs. Of course, the BBC has a long tradition of making landmark documentaries about the natural world through its natural history unit. This time, the cameras were focused on the most successful of all animal species, us humans. This concert is all about the music of the human planet, and as well as Martin Sawney's in the series, we also hear from a number of groups from around the world, and featured in Radio 3's companion series, Music Planet. And if that's not enough, the second half of tonight's prom will begin with what promises to be an unforgettable performance of Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, performed on instruments made entirely from recycled scrap. For me, there's nothing quite as exciting as the start of the journey. And to begin this journey, we head north, to the far north, and one of my favourite countries on the planet. I've been lucky enough to visit Greenland 14 times whilst running scientific polar exploration teams. And I head back there this week, actually. On this Arctic island, temperatures regularly plummet to minus 40 and some. And in the winter, it's dark for weeks on end, and little grows. Yet humans have just found extraordinary ways to survive here, found a place to build a rich music culture. A representative of that culture is the man who has become known as the voice of Greenland, Rasmus Luther.
We're going to hear two of his own compositions, Inunak Nutak, which is New Life, and to begin, Melugada Iluni, I Can Feel It in My Soul. So please, welcome Greenland's Rasmus Lubert with Kristen Sergo on accordion and Jane Clark on violin.
Ustad
In Music Planet, Rasmus Lubet said that in Greenland you have to have a powerful voice in order to make yourself heard in the vast glacial spaces there. He certainly does. Now a song about new life. Rasmus Lubet singing his song Inunek Nutak, meaning new life. With him, Christian Sogor on the accordion and Jane Clark, the violinist. Rasmus using his hands to manipulate the sound issuing from his mouth there, producing that vibrato at the end. And lots of flags being waved from supporters all around the hall. Well, now coming back onto the stage, hopefully with his microphone working properly this time, is the presenter, Paul Rose.
Well done, Rasmus. Well done.
Well, the voice of Greenland, Rasmus Lubet, performing with him, Jane Clark on violin, and Christian Sogor on accordion. Next, we're going to hear more from The Human Planet. The music for the series was written by multi-talented musician, songwriter, composer, and producer Nitin Sawhney, who's described as perhaps his task as perhaps his greatest privilege and greatest challenge. For this Human Planet prom, Nitin has gone back to his original compositions and made new arrangements, which are being performed here for the very first time. And this next piece, entitled One People, One Planet, showcases some of the most stunning images from the series, setting the human stars of Human Planet in the vast, iconic wildernesses that they call home. To perform One People, One Planet, the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Haywood.
Thank you.
It's quite moving seeing music normally you're barely aware of when it underscores the TV programme being brought to life by the concert orchestra.
That was One People, One Planet, composed by Nitin Sawhney and performed by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. Now, production teams from Human Planet and Music Planet visited Africa time and time again during the making of the two series, from the deserts of the Central Sahara to the mountains in Ethiopia and the steamy equatorial jungles of the Congo. But my guess is that when most of us think of Southern Africa, we think of countries with vast grasslands teeming with game, the birthplace of humankind. Our next performer comes from just such a place, Zambia. Enoch Mbongwe is a kind of village troubadour, and his songs record history or have a strong moral message. And although the Music Planet producers had heard of Enoch's great musical ability, contact him proved a real challenge. In the end, they asked a popular radio station, the Zambezi Valley Broadcast, to broadcast a message asking him for a meeting. And the plan worked, because someone in the village passed him the message, and Enoch duly arrived on his motorized push bike with his kulumbu strapped to his back. Now, what's a kulumbu, I can hear you ask. Well, you may want to know, we just found out that it's an ancient musical bow which uses a gourd as a resonating chamber, played with a stick and traditionally performed bare-chested. Now, Enoch has had a kulumbu shirt specially made for this prom. It has a really big hole cut out in the front, allowing him to rest the kulumbu on his stomach so that it resonates. And as you're about to hear, this creates a natural wah-wah effect, which gives the kulumbu its distinctive sound. We're now going to hear Enoch perform two of his songs. Tulumbe Muami, or Devil Song, uses classic Bible stories to tell the audience to beware of the wiles of Satan. And to begin, Enoch is going to perform Kulilana, or going to a funeral. This advises people not to go to a funeral empty-handed, and certainly not to go to burials just for the free food. You've been warned. Making his first ever appearance outside Zambia. Welcome, Enoch Mbongwe.
Enoch Mbongwe from Zambia, Kalumbu.
Kulilana ba magulilana me tihimi sozino vantu tihimi sozino vantu. bagale bagayindi anyamuga kutirwe agantunya nagaye yagali mumansa ibagale bagayindi anyamuga kutirwe agantunya nagaye yagali mumansa lino ba mandabu ya mengu ni walila no bantu lino kogo ndabu ya nguni walila no bantu uba uhiji nkoti balaji swati iba unka kutirwe belega pongo batumaga unka kutirwe pa uhiji nkoti balaji swati iba unka kutirwe belega pongo batumaga unka kutirwe Balubilo mbabo ba unka kutirwe nagabaga guni umata hipere gumisalo bawe insisi balubilo mbabo ba unka kutirwe nagabaga guni umata hipere gumisalo guni walila no bantu abawo yiginkoti ndabuya guni walila no bantu abawo insisi ndabuya guni walila no bantu abawo yiginkoti
The second song is about the devil, Eva, Adam, Cain killing his own brother.
Bama tulemeke mwamihilenga, ndakomba tulemeke mwamihilenga, kambo wakatuma mununu, wakabona satani wayandilila. Lucifer musoga wabutambo mungele wagatanda kuchuru imwami wa mubamba kubota walongo yo walifumpula kugwena kumalengelo anyika Lucifer wanjila mumusoga wamuvenda mutumbo mumunda Eva kamulya buyo muyelo kambo mwaulya mulapano Eva naga ulya muyelo bama watolela tangu bonse banjila mujinyonyono Ba watonse no male ya tagate kwa tonse faluriha ii Zirenga na ganyi mamunda Ngoyo wambila Adamu Adamu gamuswabu yo munda Kambo mwatovela Lucifer Zirenga na ganyi mamunda Ngoyo wambila Adamu Adamu gamuswabu yo munda Kambo mwatovela Lucifer Lucifer musoga wabuta Mungeli munda gatanda kutu Bama na mubombo kubota Adamu na agaswa munda Lucifer awalo wakili Wamu yenga imwana kwa Adamu Kaini wachaya munyina novantu Bama ii Ilenga nagabona bulowa Wamubo ya mulomba na kai Kaini uli uli ave Ilenga nagabona bulowa Wamubo ya mulomba na kai Kaini Guri guri ave, kaini guri guri ave, kaini ahwile ula.
Ena ndimende mbila.
Jilenga na ganye mawaga, nabusinga bulongo omusa, ulalega kukupa butebu, ayebonda kusinga omusa. Goyenda, goya wenda mwenyega. Efa naga mwamaga nayo. Bama watali gai ulila
Bama imwanangu
Eva walila
Iiii Imwanangu kainu uligula abela Iiii
Adamu naga mwamaga nayo Walo watali gai ulila Bama imwanangu Adamu wala walila Mawataliga iulida Adamu awalo wagalila Bama imwana ngume
I'm happy to be in England for the first time. My name is Mbongwe Hajua from Zambia Southern Province.
Enoch Umbungwe, as he said, from Zambia, singing the devil song and wearing his leopard print Kalumbu shirt and a lovely floppy hat. And shaking hands with presenter Paul Rose as they swap places. Paul now coming back onto the platform to introduce the next sequence from Human Planet.
Zambia's Enoch Umbungwe. Fabulous. Now they say... Yeah. Now they say never work with children and animals. Well, maybe that's true in most cases, but not for the team that made Human Planet. Many of the most memorable characters were the children and young people who helped give the series its heart and soul. Animals were, of course, vital too. Virtually every story in the series has at least one animal star, even if more than a few ended up on the dinner menu. The next Human Planet sequence demonstrates the huge range of emotions Nitin Sawhney had to consider when composing the soundtrack for the series. Get ready for an emotional roller coaster as we take you from the most tender moments in the series onto the funniest, then to some of the scariest, and finally to the most exciting, adrenaline-filled sequences of them all.
Thank you.
children, animals and adventure. The laughter you heard a response to the visuals from the screens all around the Royal Albert Hall showing monkeys pinching bottles of a popular fizzy drink, children enjoying a mud fight and an elk holding up the traffic. Well, the musical adventure here at the Royal Albert Hall continues with the Mongolian band Huzuk Tung. And while they're getting the stage ready, let's hear a little about their home country in a brief excerpt from Radio 3's Music Planet. They featured in the Grasslands programme that went out in February this year. Lucy Duran met Huzuk Tung's manager, Bumachir.
There's a huge herd of horses coming up the hill towards us. And that is one thing that we've seen a lot of as we've been going through this landscape, is enormous herds of horses, but there's not a single human being with them. Are they wild horses?
Horses can be called as semi-wild in Mongolia. Herders let their horses be wild, and then if necessary they catch them, and then they make them calm to use.
And what about the famous mare's milk?
Mongolians have a long tradition to consume mare's milk, fermented mare's milk. It is one of the few fermented drinks in the tradition of Mongols.
But there are a lot of songs about horses, aren't there?
Many cultural elements in Mongolia have to do or mention somehow horse. Many songs, most of the songs somehow mention horses.
So what's going to happen now?
The baby horses suck the mother, and then that lets the milk pour out easily.
It's such a stunning sight.
It is.
Because it's late afternoon and the shadows are very long and the horses are all bunched together. In the distance, just this ring of mountains all around us and the clouds hugging the mountains. It's really beautiful. Incredible landscape.
And here come Huzuk Tung, who play beautiful horse-headed fiddles as well as using their overtone singing. Quite an amazing sound. Listen to this. To introduce them, here once again is Paul Rose.
Charles Hazelwood and the wonderful BBC Concert Orchestra will be performing more of Nitin Sawhney's music for the human planet in the second half of this prom. But to take us into the interval, we now head to Asia. Mongolia is a land of stark yet breathtakingly beautiful landscapes. A place so vast it can be hard to find any humans at all. And the music of our next ensemble, Huzuk Tung, vividly captures and evokes the sounds of this empty landscape with powerful vocal acrobatics and mournful fiddles which whip you around like the desert winds. The word husuk refers to a cart used by pastoral nomads. And the Huzuktun is simply the name for the nomads who move these carts across the lush grasslands of the Gobi Desert, traveling with their camels, yaks, and horses, searching for fresh pasture. These Huzuktun people represent the very heart of this traditional Mongolian way of life. Some of you may remember the incredible Mongolian horse lassoing sequence in the Grasslands episode of The Human Planet. From the words of their traditional songs to the horse head fiddles on which they perform, Huzuktun's music conjures up the very essence of this traditional nomadic way of life. And as more and more Mongolians head to the city, it's an ancient tradition and musical lifestyle that is increasingly under threat. Although the songs we're about to hear are more recent, their traditional sound would have been familiar to Genghis Khan back in the 12th century. Please welcome from Mongolia the musicians of Huzuktun.
Hold on, hold on. Oh,
Praise for the River Tez, and then a song about Tolai Bandi, a Mongol Robin Hood. Finally, from Kuzuktung, Mongols, a song recalling the Genghis Khan Empire of the 13th century, warning the younger generation never to forget the greatness of their ancestors.
Yeah.
That was Kuzutun, a band featured in the Grasslands programme in Radio 3's Music Planet. They've come all the way from Mongolia, especially for this concert. They are the overtone singers Adya Dorj, who also plays djembe, drum and flute, Chulan Bata, who also plays horse-headed fiddle, Batsorig, another horse-headed fiddler, Arienbold, who also plays the grand fiddle, Ugan Bayar, who also plays the donbor lute, and finally the zither player Amar Bayaz Galan. Well, the second half of this Human Planet Prom takes us north of Mongolia to northern Siberia for songs from the band Ayakhan, and finally to the warmth of the Pacific Ocean with the Bibilang shark calling group from Papua New Guinea. There's more of Nitin Sawhney's music for Human Planet played by the BBC Concert Orchestra, and in the spirit of Human Planet's theme of man looking after planet Earth, there's a special moment at the start of the second half where the BBC Concert Orchestra take ecology to the extreme and turn themselves into a scrap heap orchestra. As Paul Rose mentioned earlier, they'll be playing instruments made out of recycled materials. So stand by for a unique performance of Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture, complete with cannon effects from a drum that was originally part of a car crusher. That's in 20 minutes. But in the meantime, Andy Kershaw, one of the Music Planet presenters, recalls some of the highlights of the Radio 3 series, Music Planet Remix.
Welcome to Wildlife on 3, coming to you this week as part of the Human Planet Proms from the Solomon Islands in the Pacific. The tropical rainforests of the Solomons would accord with most people's idea of paradise, and for one group of people here, they truly believe they've found a heaven right here on Earth. Devotees within the Deep Sea Canoe Movement, founded and led by Michael Melliau, spend all the time in 24-hour worship. Seriously, there really is a night shift for praying and singing some uplifting gospel like this. Looking out of this window here, up the hill towards the church, through the rainforest there,
yes.
You know, you might think you were already in the Garden of Eden.
I think.
I wonder what somebody in your position, what kind of vision or expectation of paradise you have when you already live in paradise.
You're right. Some people want to go to heaven. We want to bring heaven to earth.
But isn't it here?
It's here, I know. It's the presence of the Lord that makes heaven heaven. So when the presence of the Lord is here, this is heaven, in fact. Other people who try to convince us that we are poor, we are not. We're enjoying, we're having life, and we don't have a lot of cash, but this is, to me, is heaven
on earth
already.
It's not bad for the time being, is it?
Yeah. No. Not bad for the time being, I know.
Steel doors now through a turnstile. You couldn't imagine a location less like paradise than the maximum security wing of Pretoria Central Prison in South Africa. But we found wonderful gospel music there too. For the inmates, most of them murderers, The singing provides some form of redemption and, in a sense, escape.
We are Christians, most of us here.
Right.
So it gives us a sense of freedom, self-freedom, if you know what I'm saying.
And what about atonement and redemption for what you've done in the past?
Yeah, it makes you forget about the things. It makes you forgive yourself. That, okay, I'm doing something with myself, then let me just forgive what happened in the past. Because you can't let your past determine your future, which is why all of us decided to form this choir.
Right. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to. Why are you in here?
I'm here for murder, attempted murder, malicious damage, assault, possession and ammunition. And I'm serving 12.
12 years.
Of which I'm 4 years, 2 months into my sentence.
Right. That's a pretty long list of very violent and serious offences.
Yeah.
Thank you very, very much. Can I audition for the choir? Can I join? To a Burmese dissident living in exile across the border in western Thailand, a refugee camp is also a kind of prison. My introduction to those camps and the music played in them came with a clandestine encounter with a Burmese restaurateur in the Thai border town of Mai Sot. The owner serves up the most tempting food and guidance on resistance to the regime in Rangoon. You're still busy campaigning and organising from here in your restaurant in Thailand.
The thing is that I speak English. You know, when a lot of people come to ask me about Burma, I can talk better than the other people because I have a place. So also, I mean, you want to meet any guys here? I have so many friends, you know. I told you, I mean, there was
you one guy over there, he said, who was sentenced to death in Burma.
Yeah. So you can meet any, I mean, these are the political prisoners too. You know, you can meet the monks. So I built up a network. I mean, if you want to meet a Korean commander, I can organize for you.
Right. So it's a campaign headquarters, it's a public relations department, it's a refugee center. So what we've got here, let's face it, is a restaurant which is a front for a revolutionary guerrilla movement.
Yeah.
But let's just be realistic for a second. Are you not at all worried? It's precisely the kind of thing that these regimes do. Are you not worried at all that Burmese agents could come over the border and kill you?
I'll keep doing what I want. So I've decided to leave. I'm ready for Burma. So if I die by that way, my friend will do more.
You're still fighting?
I don't care.
Oh.
Mountaineering was not one of the skills I thought would be demanded of me when I joined Radio 3. But to reach the Kwayo people of Malaita Island in the Solomons required us to climb, with full kit, up beyond the clouds, hacking our way through vegetation I'd seen before only in the potted plant section of Marks and Spencer's. And why do the Kwayo live in this less than splendid isolation? Why, at this altitude, in this climate, that's where the best marijuana can be grown. And they trade it with those who live, not unreasonably, down at sea level, for fish. The Kwayo are so cut off from the outside world, they're still living, pretty much, in the Stone Age. And that's reflected in their music, which is also made with stones. Kwayo also entertained us with a song celebrating the murder by the grandparents' generation of the British commissioner here in 1922. It was the Kwayo's revenge for the British colonial imposition of taxation. Now, somehow or other, Dubai has earned itself a glamorous reputation. For our final programme in the Music Planet series, our theme was cities, and this somehow justified me being sent to Dubai. And in this cultural desert, I was astonished to find any local music at all, but I did. And rap music at that, from the duo Desert Heat.
Let's talk about this track on your album called Dubai, My City. There's a line in that that perhaps it was meant to amuse me, because it did. when you said of Dubai, a most unlikely claim this, we're still humble, our values are far too deep. Where is the humility out of that window?
that's what we said, we're still humble. I mean, it's us.
It's the people who represent values.
Exactly.
So you can look out the window.
So the people of Dubai have had nothing to do with all this out here.
No, they do. They do. A building is just a structure. Tomorrow it's here, tomorrow it's not. But it's just that the speed that it's growing is really fast. But if you'd stretch the same amount of work being done another 30 or 40 years, it would seem normal. It's just that it's a lot being done in such a short time.
Yeah, that's what feels that people, old. Yeah.
Brash, ostentatious, boastful. It's a bit like rap, really, isn't it?
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Dubai, Dubai is the city of gold, and everywhere you go, it's really hard to hold your amazement as you watch history rise. Realize what dreams materialize. We don't want to brag, but let's stack the facts. Since everybody's stunning, let's talk about that. You can hate it, love it, that's how we does it. We build our own world, that's just the surface. We're going back, let's back to the future. Underwater hotels, chilling with Medusa. We riding horses, twice the price of Porsches. We make sense, your losses are profit.
The Music Planet Cities programme also took me, at last, to the intensity of Kinshasa, the capital of the latest country to be called Congo, in this case the former Zaire.
I'd wanted to go to Kinshasa for years, with it being such an engine of Pan-African music. In the compound of a rundown hotel in a slum neighbourhood of the city, I came across an ensemble playing homemade instruments and calling themselves Masanka Sankai.
Coming to the capital changed a lot of things for us. Back in Kasai, we didn't have microphones to amplify our instruments, so our music could only be heard by people very close to us. So it was really music just for family and close friends. When I was young, I went to Nigeria, and I saw there how in the nightclubs, musicians were using amplifiers so that many people could hear their instruments. So when I came to Kinshasa, I found a way of putting a microphone into my likembe, my thumb piano. After that, many people could hear, and we can play in a compound like this, and people on the streets will hear us and come and listen.
Very good. Well, thanks a lot. You couldn't do it so much in Kasai, but you can in Kinshasa. You can plug into the mains and make a racket that can be heard three streets away. This song is called Looking for Love at the Rocket Festival, of course. And truly, the most bonkers experience of our Music Planet Global Outreach programme was a visit to the Yazathon Rocket Festival in Thailand. It's not an event noted for its adherence to the concept of health and safety, although huge crowds are drawn to watch teams of people fooling with high explosive, and it gets national television coverage. The Rocket Festival begins with a carnival, a street parade, extravagant floats and lots of music. On the night before the big day, the rocket competition itself, I went to check on one of the teams known as the Students of Liquor as they made the final preparations to their missiles. And it was only at this encounter that I realised that the Yazathon Rocket Festival was about more than a few fireworks let off from a pop bottle. The rockets are about 30 feet long, and just before their launch, I found the Students of Liquor priming theirs.
How do you do? I'm Andy from the BBC. May we talk to you for the radio? How much gunpowder, how much explosive in weight, how many kilograms does he put in this?
120 kilograms.
Oh, it's 120 kilograms.
Of explosive?
Yeah.
What speed does this reach when it blasts off?
The speed they don't know, but they know that they can go very high, about 8 kilometers.
8 kilometers high?
Yes.
So I'm going now. And he's just run out the front of the tent to see how that launch from one of his competitors has fared. Why is your team called the Students of Liquor?
They drink a lot.
Drink a lot.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you. Don't worry about the bangs in the background. That's to whip up the hysteria. The fuse is lit. The big one's about to go. Not one among them would pass a breathalyzer test. And they're all leaping around, getting very ecstatic as these bangers go off.
Here we go! Here we go! Whoa! Hell! It's gone! It spirals! The crowd like it spiraling! Still in vision, still climbing! Its engine's still burning as it disappears through a second cloud, still on its ascent. Unbelievable! 8 kilometres that can reach, 5 miles high. The Thai authorities must have to clear this area of Thai airspace so that this event can happen. There's no question of that. Otherwise, if you're on a commercial airliner, one of those, you could be sitting there wondering what to do with your hot towel when one of those could come past the window. The students of liquor, still capable of standing, are making their way modestly but triumphantly back to their drinking tent. Excellent.
Incineration at the Thailand Rocket Festival. Those 20 minutes were produced by Dean Craven. So we come to the second half of tonight's equally explosive BBC Proms concert, a special human planet prom with the BBC Concert Orchestra playing highlights from Nitin Sawhney's music for the TV series. Plus there are 5 groups from around the world who are featured in Radio 3's Music Planet. But we start the second half with something a little different, and to say a little different may be understating it. In front of me on the platform are members of the BBC Concert Orchestra clutching instruments made out of all sorts of recycled materials. It's the Scrap Heap Orchestra, and in a moment, the conductor Charles Hazelwood will be telling us all about the project. But taking a look around, I can see a bass drum, an enormous industrial-looking cylindrical grinding drum which is going to be played with wooden spoons. And here comes Charles Hazelwood to tell us more.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to part two of this Human Planet prom. One of the great things I think that the amazing TV series Human Planet has reminded us is how adaptable and resourceful human beings can be. And those two words, adaptable and resourceful, are right at the heart of what we offer to you now. About just under 3 months ago, I pulled together a group of leading makers of musical instruments in the UK. And I said to them, okay, guys, I want a new orchestra of instruments from you. There's only one rule, though. All the materials you use must ideally not be the conventional ones, and most certainly must have been sourced from a scrapyard or a recycling depot. In other words, other people's waste. Could such a thing be done? Well, here we are, nearly 3 months later, on the stage at the Royal Albert Hall, at the BBC Proms, no less, with an entire orchestra of instruments made entirely from scrap, stuff that maybe you threw away last month, ladies and gentlemen. Here it is on stage, and it's about to make, I hope, beautiful poetry. Now, if you're interested in following the journey, which has been extraordinary, both painful and wondrous over the last 3 months, we've made a film about it, which will be on BBC 4 television in the early autumn. It's called, not surprisingly, Scrap Heap Orchestra. Right, let me talk you through some of the materials that have been garnered to musical use. The violin and the viola section, Cynthia's violin here, for instance, is made out of a piece of toilet waste pipe, ladies and gentlemen. It has been cleaned. And the bow, because we haven't just stopped with the instruments, you know, the other sort of pieces of apparatus, such as the bow. That bow started out life as an arrow. Now, there's another bow in the second violin somewhere, which is made of a coat hanger. There it is. Look at that. A rather good use. A great use for a coat hanger, much better than what it was designed for. Now, the cello's here. Look at this. Ben is playing an instrument made out of plywood and 2 washing-up bowls. His bow is made out of bicycle spokes. Imagine that! Matthew behind him, another cellist. His cello is made primarily from the petrol tank of a medium-priced popular family car. We only have two bases. That's more than enough for our purposes. Rick's base is made a combination of a Jaguar car bonnet and part of a water cylinder. Andy's base, carrying on the aquatic theme, is actually made out of a zinc bathtub, sort of... It really is a zinc bathtub, ladies and gentlemen. A remarkably resonant body it makes, actually, and it's sort of strapped to part of a yacht mast. Now, have a look at the woodwind instruments. A couple of highlights there. Liz is playing a bassoon, which is made almost entirely from a shower cubicle. And Ileana, our principal flute, she's playing a flute which is made from shower curtain tubing. But the really interesting part here is the intricacy of the keys. How do you make keys that are going to work on a very sophisticated woodwind instrument? Well, those keys are made entirely from old cutlery. Moving on to the brass. Wonderful array there, as you can see. Noteworthy, perhaps, the trombones. A lot of plumbing material involved in the trombones. You're perhaps not surprised to hear that. But in addition... a certain amount of food processing, I think, has gone into that. Obviously, also a bit of a light fitting. But the tuba, pièce de résistance, don't you think? Look at that tuba, ladies and gentlemen. You'll no doubt be happy to know that that's made almost entirely from ventilation duct from a local burger joint. The French horns, ladies and gentlemen, made almost entirely of papier-mâché. Fancy that. And then the percussion. My goodness me, what percussion we have in store for you. First of all, the kettle drums. The one on the left there is made entirely, as you can see, from a cement mixer. Very kind of you to clap, it takes up time. The one on the right is made up from a buoy. You know, it was literally seized out of the sea, cut in half, and it now makes rather a fantastic sound. A bass drum you might just better see down here is made from the most enormous truck wheel. Resourceful to the last, you see. But I must draw your attention to the cymbals. Who would have thought that a humble pair of cymbals would take such an enormous and inordinate number of different kind of gizmos to recreate? That was formerly a bed, as you can see. It now looks like something which Professor Brainstorm would be proud of, and it makes a very compelling and authentic sound of a cymbal. So, I come back to the two words I mentioned at the start, adaptability and resourcefulness. I think first prize for adaptability must surely go to my esteemed musical colleagues on stage with me here. In most cases, they've had to almost entirely relearn their playing technique in order to make sense of these very unwieldy and strange instruments, which are heavier, feel different under the hands, feel different to blow down, you name it. So, This bunch of artists, formerly known as the BBC Concert Orchestra, now known as the Scrap Heap Orchestra, please give them a big round of applause. So now to the resourcefulness part. Well, obviously, that falls to the extraordinary band of instrument makers that we've had the great privilege to work with on this project. They really have gone the extra mile, in very many cases, presenting a prototype instrument to a member of the orchestra, which in some cases actually rendered that orchestral musician ill for a while. We're talking muscle strain, we're talking neck ache, we're talking shoulder problems, hand strain. So these makers had to go back to their laboratories, their workshops, time in and time out, to remake, to rethink, to go from a completely different direction. So I salute them for their extraordinary resourcefulness. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers, they're all up in that box there. So finally, what piece of music to showcase this unusual orchestra with? Well, it seemed to us there was only one piece that really fitted the bill, a piece which is full of heart, just like this project, but a piece which is also shot through with an awful lot of almost caustic vulgarity. That piece, ladies and gentlemen, is Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture, which has been rearranged, dare I say it, recycled by the brilliant Ian Gardner. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can probably imagine, these instruments don't stay in tune for very long, if at all, really. So we now have to retune again. I think it's worth doing. And can I just say to you that if you hear any kind of strange, sort of slightly tuneless moments in this piece, I can assure you it is not operator error.
Just a cello giving a few problems, but I think we're just about sorted. It's quite a comfort to know that any of the instruments play at all, really. Yep, Ben looks happy. Here we go.
Thank you.
Well, if you tuned in during the middle of that, you must be wondering what on earth has happened to Radio 3. We've gone environmentally friendly. That was the Scrap Heap Orchestra, the instruments made out of recycled materials, played by members of the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. And that last little cheer there was for the instrument makers who are watching their instruments in action. I have to say, all the audience are standing in sheer admiration of the instruments and the players. I think the bedstead cymbal really brought the house down, provoking the most hilarity. Well, you need never fork out millions for a Stradivarius again. Simply pop down to your local tip. Well, after all that excitement, we need to clear the rubbish off the stage, by which I mean the scrapyard instruments, of course, to reset for the BBC Concert Orchestra's more conventional layout and instrumentation. Those cheers are for the instruments as they're being carried off the stage by their players. Well, we're also going to hear our next Music Planet artists shortly. They are Aya Khan. They come from Yakutsk, the capital of the Sakha Republic, which is in northeast Siberia. There are three women who play the khomus, which is a mouth harp or a jew's harp, a traditional instrument associated with shamanism. It's said that the sound of the mouth harp can put you into a trance which can cure all sorts of psychological illnesses. Just what you need when you live in one of the coldest places on Earth. Can it cure frostbite, I wonder? Well, for Music Planet, Andy Kershaw travelled to Siberia and met Aya Khan's leader, Albina Degtyareva.
Наш народ считает себя частью природы. Мы считаем себя детьми природы.
Over the centuries, in order to survive, our people have had to live in harmony with nature. We've always taught our children how to do that. So when the men used to go out hunting, they used to ask a blessing from nature, so that they would be able to catch enough food to feed their families. And it's important too that we only take from nature what we actually need. That's our life. So we want to express that in music as well.
Now, you're from an area called the Sakha Republic in the Russian Federation. It's not an area which is very well known in the outside world. Tell us a little about it.
Yes, you're right. The Sakha Republic isn't very well known in the West. And actually, it's not very well known in the East either. And it's a very harsh climate, a continental climate with extremes of cold and heat. So in the winter, it can go right down to minus 60 degrees Celsius. And in the summer, we often get temperatures up to 35 or 38 degrees. But our nature there is unique. And the animal life is like nowhere else, too.
And how many people live there?
It's a vast territory. You can fit about five Frances into it.
Five times the size of France?
Yes, and at the same time, we have few people living in Sakha Republic. The population is about 1 million.
Good Lord.
So that's about one lake for every one person in the Republic.
And is it agricultural? Are you farmers?
There are two main peoples living in the Republic, the Yakuts, and they're known as horsemen, and the Evenkis, who are reindeer herders. People generally are self-sufficient, but of course, when people have extra, they take it to the market and sell it. But things are changing too. We have diamond mines in the Republic now.
Now, notice hanging round your neck, you have your two jew's harps, which you can hear there rattling in the background. Why is the jew's harp such a popular instrument in your part of the world?
Of course, we do have other instruments, string instruments and drums, but by far the most beloved instrument with us is the khomus, the jew's harp. It's perfect for us, because we can play melodies on it, and we can imitate the sounds of nature too. Believe it or not, we can even declare our love for each other with the khomus. And during the long, dark, depressing days of winter, when the climate is really harsh, the khomus is a kind of psychological treatment. Because when we're playing it, we're imitating the summer sound and the bird calls of the spring. And so we're summoning up the spirit of the warm weather in our villages and homes.
Aya Khan's leader, Albina Degtyareva, talking to Andy Kershaw for Radio 3's Music Planet. Well, everybody's been busy here on the stage, rearranging it, and here's Paul Rose to introduce the group itself.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, what about the Scrap Heap Orchestra? Hard to believe. Who'd have thought you could, you know, recycle an entire orchestra? Now, as Charles mentioned, you'll be able to see that performance again and the whole story behind those amazing instruments, how they were made, in a BBC 4 documentary, which will be shown later in the year. And there's also the chance to relive the rest of this Human Planet prom. It'll be shown also on BBC 4 on Friday, the 5th of August at 7:30. Well, now it's time to return to our journey from around the planet, from the vast open spaces of Mongolia, vividly brought to us by the traditional musicians of Usuktun. We now head even further north, to a land even more remote and unforgiving. Aya Khan came from the heart of surely the greatest wilderness on earth, Siberia. The group's three female musicians live in the capital of this region, Yakutsk, a city which lays claim to one of the world's greatest seasonal temperature variations, with a thermometer regularly topping 30 in the summer. And Yakutsk is also reputed to be the coldest city on Earth. To survive in these conditions, you have to be fully in touch with the nature around you and understand the dangers it presents. This was a theme that repeated itself time and time again through the Human Planet series, and it's one that musicians of Aya Khan are completely in tune with. The group's music is inspired by the sounds of nature, the howling of wolves, the calls of birds, the sound of horses, and the rushing wind and the deep groans of the thawing ice in the spring. At the heart of their sound is the humus, or mouth harp, which has a great spiritual significance in Siberian culture. It's believed to have healing qualities, and during the harsh Siberian winters, it's played to summon up the spirits and ensure the return of the sun. So, you know, let's hope that happens. Could always use a bit more sun. We're going to hear two pieces by Aya Khan, both with a link to horses. They begin with My Horse. Yakut horses have a legendary reputation, being well adapted to the extreme cold, and it was ponies from this region of Siberia that Captain Scott chose for his ill-fated final expedition to the Antarctic. Aya Khan follow this with dedication to the blacksmith's patron, Kudai Buksa. In Siberia, being a blacksmith is more than just a trade. An apprentice blacksmith is obliged to demonstrate that he has acquired the spirit of a renowned ancient master blacksmith called Kudai Buksa. Now, when I first heard this group in rehearsal, I couldn't believe the natural sound they make. I was almost looking for some other instrument or tape recorder running around here, but it all comes from their throats. So from Siberia, please give a warm welcome to Aya Khan.
Үксігі күл түйде бергелі ғыңыры таңырып ол бұтырың айы тойын. Үз бүрікте үнділман қаллантын жүгі айыны орты тұрудайдыға мұғылынаның төлетіпен тұран әннелән, әдейлән бербіт. Аман жүйін асын кірсі күласын сұты ела қыласын асын күзі өлімаған тұлғы құрды баға мерден өн көрер күн ағынар көрсінлар тұрды дүға масырақ бағынан баттаран кімлері бе. Hirbet darbat, hingelen,
Was Aya Khan, and their next song is a dedication to the blacksmith's patron Kudai Baksa. Listen out for the blacksmith sounds.
Komunnah ulu ustar, komunnah oyuttar, terüttere bolbut Kudai Baksa anallah cühüyü. Thank you.
A Siberian take on Verdi's Anvil Chorus. That was dedication to the blacksmith's patron, Kudai Baksha, performed by Aya Khan. Three young women wearing amazing traditional dress, long white skirts, black patterned overdresses with thick fur sleeves and gleaming headdresses and loops of mirrored necklaces. Well, now, the BBC Concert Orchestra are going to return to the stage for the next sequence from Nitin Sawhney's music for Human Planet. While they're getting set, let's look forward for a moment to the last of our Music Planet artists. They've come from literally the other side of the world, from Papua New Guinea. And in fact, this is the first time any of them have left their own country. They're the Bibalang Shark Calling Group. The shark calling was first featured in the Human Planet TV programmes. We saw Blaise Soka, the shark caller, attracting sharks by shaking a rattle in the ocean and by chanting songs to them. It took them some weeks to catch a shark. And when Andy Kershaw went over to meet the shark callers, he went out with Blaise in a small canoe to try his luck.
What are we doing, Blaise?
I was singing the song of the shark, or the spirit of the shark will hear what I sing. I mention I'm calling them so that they will hear me singing loudly, and they will send a shark to me and I will catch it.
Singing to the spirits of the sharks, yeah, rather than the sharks?
Yeah. I sing to them and I ask them, I told them, we the shark calling people, we need shark to eat. And we want you people to give us a shark.
When you rattle the hoops of seashells into the water there, some people may imagine that that would not attract the sharks, but scare them away.
Oh, no. When I rattle the seashells, yes, and the shark will hear the noise of the rattle, they think that there is a tuna piece fighting. The shark will come and eat the tuna piece.
Right. I see, that's the theory
it's
anyway.
It's the way we attract sharks.
Are the shark songs that the men sing in the village, are they supposed to help you catch sharks?
Yeah. When I travel out to make my shark calling fishing, yeah, the whole men will make their prayer and they will sing and make their sing to give power to me to catch shark.
Andy Kershaw going shark fishing with the Human Planet shark caller Blaise Soka. Well, sometime later they were still in the dugout canoe, still trying to catch a shark.
Looks like something from Mutiny on the Bounty. Palms and mango trees growing darker as they spread inland and then climbing up onto the mountains behind. Everything very lush, verdant. Okay, Blaise, what's the technique then for catching sharks?
When the sharks hear the rattles, yeah, and it comes closer, I take the bait with a stick and push it down into the sea. We use fish,
right,
and when the shark comes,
yes,
I used to trap it this way now.
So just as the shark was nosing the dead fish, you'd put the lasso around its head, right?
And it comes closer, I pull it this way, yes, and I put a loop in it.
I see, you put the leather loop around its head. What happens then? It struggles until it's too tired?
It fights against me and I hit it.
Well, before the shark callers take to the stage, more of Nitin Sawhney's music. And here to tell us more about it, Paul Rose.
Well, from Siberia, we heard the haunting sound of Aya Khan. Now, one of the things that makes us human beings so extraordinary is that we have managed to make our homes in such varied and diverse landscapes and climates, something few other animals can do. This is largely due to our supposed intelligence and extreme adaptability. In this next sequence from Human Planet, we're going to showcase two of the most diverse landscapes from the series. First, we head to the steamy jungles of Cambodia and the famous ruins of Angkor Wat. And from the Arctic program, we'll enjoy early spring in the most northern human settlement on Earth, Siorapalak in Greenland. To perform Man and Nature by Nitin Sawhney, the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood.
The BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood, in that sequence called Man and Nature from Nitin Sawhney's Music for the Human Planet. Taking us on the visuals on the screens here at the Royal Albert Hall, from a Buddhist monk in an ancient temple to a pod of whales to a birdcatcher on a mountaintop. So in a moment we'll be hearing our final Music Planet artists, the Bibelang Shark Calling Group, from a remote part of Papua New Guinea. It's been quite an event to bring them here. None of them have travelled outside Papua New Guinea before, and none of them had a passport, nor did they know any of those bureaucratic details necessary, such as their birth date. But happily, all those challenges have been overcome. They took their first trip in an aeroplane and arrived here in London a few days ago, being both amazed and a little bewildered, I think, to be transplanted into the centre of a big city. They've actually taken to wearing bits of leaf and twig picked up in Hyde Park, just across the road here, as apparently they were missing their native forests. Well, the stage is just being prepared. There are 8 performers in the group. A couple of them play guitars, others play percussion instruments that Andy Kershaw was talking about, made from seashells or other bits and pieces that they pick up on the beach. And they're a wide age range too, from mid-20s, early-20s, right the way through to older members of the community. So this is very much a community performance. And they're coming on to the stage now, dressed in their traditional outfits with brass yokes around their necks and loincloths, and being warmly greeted here at the Royal Albert Hall, the Bibberlang Sharp Calling Group.
From Nitin Sawhney's score for Human Planet, we heard Man and Nature, performed by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Charles Hazelwood. Now, some of you will remember an extraordinary sequence in the Oceans episode of Human Planet, where a man canoes out to sea and calls sharks from the depths of the ocean using a coconut rattle. This extraordinary tradition from Papua New Guinea is closely interwoven with traditional music, song and dance, which is why the Music Planet team went to find the Bibberlang Shark Calling Group. The group live on the glorious palm fringed shore of the remote Melanesian island of New Ireland. And this is the first time any of them have traveled outside their country. The Bibberlang group was started by singer and guitarist Langan Daniel. First recruit was his father, Daniel Socker, who has a strong falsetto voice. To this, he's added the... To this, he's added the powerful tenor of their friend, Tamal Gerard, who also plays guitar. Completing the lineup... Completing the lineup on traditional percussion, Michael Bob, Frederick Dominic, Hilary Albert, Peter Lawrence, and Albert Gregory. Peter and Alfred are also doubling as dancers and will be acting out the ritual of sharks calling, a story which was featured in the Human Planet series. Although the repertoire of shark calling songs is well known to everyone on New Ireland, remarkably, a moral copyright exists. And to have permission to sing songs from other villages, Langan's had to buy each of them from its owner for 20 kina, which is about £5. And thankfully, he did, because the performance we're about to hear promises to be a unique and memorable experience. Please welcome from New Ireland in Papua New Guinea, the Bibberlang Shark Calling Group.
Yeah.
The title of that song was translated by the band as Killing People, a throwback to Papua New Guinea's not-so-long-ago headhunting days. Now an a cappella song about shark calling.
This is my
Lasset Mat, led by singer Tamale Gerard, and with Sambalaman now, the shark caller loops the noose around the shark's neck. Sambalaman. And finally, Lulima, the shark is caught and the village can enjoy a good feast. That was the Bibelang Shark Calling Group from Papua New Guinea. And during that last song, Alfred Gregory and Frederick Dominic were acting out the shark calling ritual, complete with wooden shark. Everyone here at the Royal Albert Hall certainly enjoying the diversity of music making from all the many cultures around the world featured on the stage tonight. And members of the concert orchestra joining in the applause for these visitors from the other side of the world. And the group taking one final bow. They're wearing magnificent feathered headdresses and giving us all a wave as they leave the stage. And as they make their way off, back on comes conductor Charles Hazelwood and the composer of the music for Human Planet, Nitin Sawhney, who'll be telling us about the process. I was talking earlier to Dale Templer, who is the producer of the series on TV, and she said that meeting Nitin, she knew that this was the man she wanted to make the music for this epic program, and here he is.
Good evening. I'm Nitin Sawhney. Composing the music for the Human Planet series was an incredible privilege for many reasons, and here are a few. First of all, the central themes of human resilience and coexistence with nature resonated strongly with me and were a great source of inspiration. The scenes speak for themselves in telling our story with vivid beauty and thought-provoking sequences. These stories of human resolve and adaptation to the most extreme conditions are a feast for any musician's imagination. Secondly, the cinematography and production standards were so high, and these were the highest I'd come across in 20 years as a film and television composer, although the idea of working closely with four very strong-minded directors and Dale Templer, the series producer, was pretty daunting at first. The experience itself was both exhilarating and uniquely educational. The music itself was composed in a blinding 8-week flurry of sleepless nights and determination to find a sound. This brings me to my main reason for being involved in the series, not that one, this one. Finding a musical language that could express all the could bypass all the boundaries of nationality and politics was the greatest and most wonderful challenge I've ever faced. At first, we weren't sure how much orchestral work there should be in the music, but ultimately we needed an emotional subtext so universal that anyone could hear and feel it straight away. The orchestra became integral to that journey. And now, as well as the thrill of having the music performed here at the BBC Proms, I can also confirm a full orchestral Human Planet tour of the UK next spring. And so to the final piece in this Human Planet prom. We've called it Natural Born Survivors, and with it, we're showcasing each of the episodes in turn. We end with the Jungles programme and probably the most evocative and thought-provoking footage in the series. After... I'm going to read from this. After nearly a year of negotiating, the team were given approval to film one of the last groups of people in the world who were still classified as uncontacted. The Brazilian authorities monitor these people because their way of life is under threat from illegal logging and mining companies. The Human Planet team joined one of their monitoring flights, and this final footage was a world first for the series. To conduct the BBC Concert Orchestra, please welcome back Charles Hazelwood. Thank you.
Natural Born Survivors, a final sequence from Nitin Sawhney's music for Human Planet, played by the BBC Concert Orchestra with their leader Cynthia Fleming and conducted by Charles Hazelwood. We've also heard five artists from Radio 3's companion series Music Planet who came from all across the world especially for this concert, and they're coming onto the stage now. From Greenland, Rasmus Lubert, from Zambia, Enoch Mbongwe, from Mongolia, Huzuk Tung, from Northern Siberia, Aya Khan, and from Papua New Guinea, the Bibelang Shark Calling Group, and people all around the hall are getting to their feet to applaud the diversity of performers. Incidentally, if you're concerned that our fascination with far-flung cultures borders on voyeurism, it cuts both ways. Members of Huzuk Tung were taking photos of the Scrap Heap Orchestra during the rehearsal this afternoon, proving, if any proof were needed, that man is the same curious beast the world over. Well, this prom exploring similarities as much as diversity amongst the members of the human species. But everybody crowded onto the stage. If you enjoyed the prom and want to hear it again, go to the Radio 3 website. You can listen again for the next 7 days. Or if you're within reach of London, why not come along to tomorrow's performance of the same prom, starting at 11 in the morning. And if you'd like to experience more of Human Planet and Music Planet, there's lots to see and hear at their respective websites, bbc.co.uk/humanplanet and bbc.co.uk/radio3. Just follow the links from there to Music Planet. Tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, a performance of Verdi's Requiem with Semyon Bychkov conducting the BBC Symphony Chorus, the BBC National Chorus of Wales and the London Philharmonic Choir and the BBC Symphony Orchestra. That's live, of course, from the Royal Albert Hall, but with cheers ringing out all around me. For now, that's all from us here in Kensington. It's back to Broadcasting House.
Thank you very much. That was Louise Fryer. Well, coming up in a couple of minutes' time, Between the Ears, the programme follows a London taxi driver as he engages in a period of intensive meditation known as a summer sesshin in a Zen monastery. And then Here and Now is at 10:30. There's traditional music from Catherine Tickell, who performs new works based on Northumbrian folk tunes. Well, to take us up to the Zen monastery, here's music from the north of Europe. This is Sounds of the Nordic Islands, and this track is called The Flower of a Rose.
Thank you.
Flower of a Rose, a traditional song from Gotland in Sweden, performed by Vilu Veski, soprano sax, Tut Kaluste, accordion, and the vocalist Eva Renglin. Well, now on Radio 3, another chance to hear an edition of Between the Ears. We join a group of Buddhists searching for silence in a noisy world in Summer Sesshin.
To take part in the Sesshin, it's like taking the lid off a boiling kettle. It's sort of all this stuff just comes out.
It's a Japanese word, sesshin, made up of two parts, sesshin, and shin is the mind, but sometimes you can translate it as heart.
As soon as I sat in zazen, I was told, we don't move, and you don't do anything with your mind. You just allow your mind to be.
It's an anchor in which you tie a rope around sometimes and just hold on and think, okay, you know, this whole thing that we see outside, the noise, the people, it's there, but it doesn't actually penetrate. I started driving a taxi, actually. I started driving in 1990, started practicing probably about 1978, 1979, something like that.
Hi, it's, what's the time? 4:30, it's Friday afternoon, and I just had a very strange job whereby I took a lady from Marylebone High Street around the corner to Paddington Street to dispose of her recycling in a taxi, which kind of, I think the sense of irony was lost on her, because I said to her, is it a bit environmentally unfriendly to actually take a taxi to get rid of, like, seven bags of newspapers, but she seemed to think that she was saving the planet. That's interesting.
I first went in probably about 2003, 2004, and I went up to Sheringham in Norfolk for my first sesshin. And as a sesshin sort of comprises of 3 days of concentrated meditation. The wake-up bell goes at sort of 6 o'clock in the morning, and Zazen starts at 6:30 in the morning.
We're coming to a point of touching the mind, coming closer and more intimate with the mind, our true self, rather than what we think we are. So we're coming back because we've forgotten what we are. So that's what a retreat basically is about, to come back to that place again. You're on the underground or you're on a bus, that mind is still there, it's just that we've forgotten it. And our mind's busy thinking about something else. So we lose it, we lose touch. Basically, we lose touch. So what we're doing is touching the mind again, we're coming back. So everything we do and the way we create the situation on a retreat is about coming back to touch that spirit, that mind again. Touching the mind again, we're coming back, touch that spirit, that mind again.
Behind that noise is a silence that is deafening. Once you experience that silence, you can actually enhance the amount of that silence that is there, if that makes any sense. It's and you can actually then discern what is just mental chattering.
Yeah, basically about how much noise pollution there is in London and how do you escape it? I mean, whether it be internally, like, you know, playing music, you know, so it drowns out the exterior noise, or whether it going away for a weekend or whatever you do, go swimming and avoid it. I mean, does anyone have any methods of escaping the sort of the continual noise of London?
Sleep.
So while you're sleeping, do you have silence then? I mean, I'm interested to know.
No, actually, we'd have the TV on. TV. I fall asleep to the TV.
That noise negates any other noise. Do you think that's right, or does it just make you go to sleep?
It just makes you go to sleep.
Okay, any other forms of relaxation that would suit, you know, a sort of busy lifestyle?
Smoking weed, I suppose.
So seriously, do you smoke?
I'm assisted.
So you make? Do you smoke a bit? Have a joint, and it
does.
I do.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. But don't you think, or do you not find that with smoking like that, it initiates other thoughts and a thought process whereby you kind of, okay, yeah, you might not be taking in the shit that we normally deal with, but does it not sort of develop any other kind of feelings of anything else that?
The only feelings you'll get is it makes you hungry, that's about it.
Well, I'd say, yeah, the noise of opening the crisp packet or the Pringles box is... it's a killer, isn't it? Right, so...
Especially with you snoring, Pambo.
Yeah. Yeah, my snoring, eh? Boys, you shouldn't probably mention that. It was one night and only one.
Oh, all right, mate, yeah.
It was only one night, mate.
Zen, in effect, is concentration of the mind. Zazen means seated. So it's seated concentration of the mind. And Master Deshi Maru, his definition of what is Zen, he gave a definition of Zen as being, of true Zen, is sitting quietly in the right posture. And it means setting the mind at rest. So this mind that's always going, this chattering mind, setting that mind at rest. We don't sit directly on the floor, we sit on a cushion, which we call the zafu. And obviously the height of that zafu is very important because that affects the whole posture of the body. So there's two aspects to this. There's the body, the posture itself, which then affects the breathing and then the breathing affects the state of mind. So through the posture, we're influencing the mind.
It can be really hard, actually. It's not just physically hard, because obviously you've got the pain element of sitting still and your legs going numb, and, you know, it's the knee joints hurt, your hip joints hurt, your back hurts, your arm, you know, everything can actually hurt from doing nothing, really, which is quite interesting. But it's also, it's the mental discipline, and it's almost like, it feels in some ways like a bit of an avalanche of everything happening in your head. It's all moving.
Noise. You see, it's constant noise. And it's just, you know, and obviously because there was a lady who was asking me to put down the music, and I did, but there was still a noise. And the noise is coming from people, but on Friday night we do put the music up right there.
At this time I was, I guess it was, I was graduated, and I was kind of looking for something meaningful, I guess.
Yes.
Do you know that girl you served with the promotional, yeah?
Yeah.
She's all the chicken quesadilla and the other one. She thought chicken quesadilla is two dish, and she wants another dish.
Yeah, sure. Just ask her what she wants and ask Emmanuel to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
And then I went to a retreat for 3 days. And funny enough, I still didn't know that this is Buddhism, because in Poland, the main religion is Catholic, and I guess I would be scared if I knew, but because I just felt, that's why I kind of started to do. And then I went, and then right after the retreat, I came to England, and the only experience I actually had is when I was studying and working in a bar, and then I started to work in a bar.
Someone asked me to turn down the music, but it's not the music, are the people. People make the noise. It's just, you cannot hear the music right now. But it's still noisy.
No, don't turn it off. Leave it quiet.
No, I did, but still, it's noisy. You okay?
Guinness, please.
Sure. What did he say? Oh, yeah, just chuck it then.
It was almost like having a double life, because I was so different being here on a retreat, or, you know, like in meditating in London, and then being in a bar. It was like I completely had to change my persona. I was presenting myself like from different angle, or, you know, I even changed my voice.
Emmanuel, I need a cucumber. No, give me fresh one, please.
You asked me to speak louder. I used to speak very loud at work, because there's no other way. You know, when you want to communicate and the level of music is kind of, it's loud, you need to shout. And I used to drink myself, and I used to go to a party as well, and then it's just like when you have drink or two, your voice rise, and suddenly you're shouting because, oh yeah, look, and and when you're meditating, you actually
So a big part of our practice, especially when we're on a retreat, is that we do things in silence as much as possible, bring the silence down without any unnecessary speech. So if we're chopping carrots in the kitchen, we do it in silence as far as possible, unless you need to say, how does this need to be chopped? So that then brings your attention. So the point of the silence and being in silence is you bring your attention and concentration to what you're doing in that moment. And obviously your mind in those spaces, in the silence, is going to start thinking about, have I paid the gas bill, or what did I say yesterday, or I shouldn't have said that to the wife, you know, so my wife. And so those things come up, but then you come back again and again and again. So the repetition comes back, come back, come back to the silence and the stillness. So in the same way we have meals, obviously, and the meals that we eat in silence. And in normal situation there would be talking, conversations, but your attention would be on that conversation, not necessarily on what you're eating. And you could get to the end of a meal and think, what have I just eaten? I've forgotten. I don't remember eating anything. And that's the normal way people eat quite often.
Special curry, vermicelli noodles, chips and fried rice.
I work in a hectic environment in the kitchen. You know, I'm serving customers. It's basically chef work. It's a Chinese food takeaway in Southport.
And a portion of chips. Anything else?
Fish and chips.
Oh, is it fish and chips?
Yeah,
chicken. Oh, my hours are just ridiculous.
So I'm going deaf.
You know, split shifts, 3.5 hours in the morning, and roughly about 8 to 9 hours in the evening. And that's like 6 days a week. So as you can see, you know, all my time's consumed. You know, there's not much time for social life. You know, one day off.
Customer collecting their meal. It's a phone order.
Because it's customer orientated, because I'm dealing with customers. You know, customers are not always straightforward. You know, so you have to make adjustments to fit around people. Somebody, I think it was basically, he ordered fish, chips and peas. We forgot to put the peas in the bag. He came back, you know, about half an hour later, and just got really dramatic over a portion of peas. And he got really aggressive. So I responded with aggression, saying, and he threw the peas at us, literally. And I thought, oh, and he explained to us that, well, he had an argument with his wife over a portion of peas. It's like, wow, okay. You know, you can have your money back if you like, you know. I can't remember what happened, but we got in a bit of a, you know, argument over a portion of peas, and he just walked off.
What did I say yesterday? Oh, I shouldn't have said that to the wife. But then you come back again and again and again. So the repetition comes back, come back, come back to the silence and the stillness. So the repetition comes back, come back, come back to the silence. So the repetition comes back, come back, come back to the silence.
I went to the Church of England school as in my early years. Everyone, I think, is on a spiritual quest or a philosophical search, looking for something or some kind of meaning of existence, of life. And yeah, I was a great believer in Christianity. Although I don't despise it, I was looking for something more deeper. I think the story goes was when I went to college doing motor mechanics in my late teens, I seen a poster of Master Dishimara on a door. So I just looked at it and I thought, I was really intrigued.
Yeah. Well, so it's difficult. I was brought up as a Christian. I very much wanted the Bible story to be true. It sounded great. it was very clear to and easy to be a Christian as a young person, because it told me exactly what was right and exactly what was wrong. All I had to do was do the right thing. That's nice, and it meant I didn't have to think too hard. I also probably didn't develop myself very much, because I didn't really ask many questions of myself. I just tried to make myself be a certain thing, be a certain way. And as I grew up and went through school and developed and walked around, looked at people, saw things, I found lots of things that contradicted the received wisdom I'd been given. I had to accept it wasn't true. That was very, very painful.
Good is down, 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 down. God is fatigue. No,
God is fatigue. God
so
is
I want to help God.
I'm ordained as a nun. To take part in a session is just so important to me. All this stuff just comes out, and you have to sit there looking at it, and you think, really, is this... I've just thought this thought so many times. Wasn't this exactly what I was thinking in the morning? Do I have to think it all over again? And you realise how much experiences... you articulate your previous experiences to yourself. You tell the stories of your life over and over again. I think it's like dreaming.
You've got really dramatic over a portion of the piece. You got really aggressive. So I responded with aggression.
You tell the stories of your life over and over again.
When you have a drink or two, your voice rise, and suddenly you're shouting because, oh yeah, look, and...
You tell the stories of your life over and over again.
It feels in some ways like a bit of an avalanche of everything happening in your head. It's all moving.
And they threw the peas at us, literally.
Oh yeah, look, and...
Over and over again.
Buddhism is primarily about identifying our suffering, because us as Buddhists, we believe that to exist is to suffer. Working in London with the outside noise and outside visual stimulants that are there, you know, whether it be your mind can be set off quite easily by somebody equally driving badly in front of you, cutting you up, or a passenger getting in who's cross because they're late and expecting you to be able to turn time back.
I find when I'm in London, I walk so much faster and get huffy and arsey about people not walking at the same pace as I do.
So the more you understand the concept of time,
getting in your way,
in that you cannot ever separate yourself from where you are right now.
Oxford Street, meandering about and then suddenly stopping.
Sometimes I've said to people, do you think you can be anywhere other than where you are now?
So,
and you will get your train if you get your train. That's all you can do. If you're late for your train, that doesn't mean you're anywhere else. That just means that the train isn't where you want to be. But that doesn't mean to say you've missed it. It's just that isn't where you're going. I said that to one person, they got very upset and said, what are you talking about? So I do stop, I have to stop myself from kind of being too philosophical, is that right?
If you sit in meditation long enough and regularly, then the only way I can describe it is that the inside of your head or your thoughts behave a bit like the snow shaker, where you know when it all settles down and then suddenly you're just left with clear substance, liquid inside of your snow shaker, but that's how your head feels almost, and it's it's kind of...
I work with people with learning disabilities. They come and stay at the respite service that I work at, and I I find my